I'm James, and this is The Stage Right Side with James Whiteside, where we'll dive deep into the dark world of dance and come up on the bright side. Oh, that's terrible. Welcome back to The Stage Right Side with James Whiteside. I am your host, James Whiteside, principal dancer at American Ballet Theatre, and I am joined today by Marinsky Theatre principal dancer, Xander Parrish. Welcome.
Hey, good to join you.
So yesterday we tried to do this on Instagram Live, and we're thwarted by bad Wi-Fi. I don't know what sort of Wi-Fi you're dealing with over there, Xander, but I...
Yeah, not great, sadly.
So today we're trying it out on Zoom. So this quarantine, this COVID-19 crisis has given The Stage Right Side a new feel, because usually I do it from my dressing room at the Met, but now I get to talk to people in Marinsky, my friends in Marinsky and Royal Ballet and all over the world. And I would like my listeners to write to me on Instagram and tell me who they want to see as a guest. All right. So let's dive right in. Xander, did we first meet in Sun Valley, Idaho? Was that where we first met? No,
we met before that. We met when I came to do Sylvia with Bella in ABT.
Right. Oh my gosh. Yeah, we didn't.
When was that? That was 2015?
14?
I don't know. I've forgotten. It was a while ago.
16? Anybody else? Any guess? Maybe. yeah, and I mean, you came in pretty much like a couple days before the show, rehearsed, and then did the show, and we didn't really get to hang much. And then the second time we crossed paths was at Ballet Sun Valley, when Bella was artistic director before all that drama. If you don't know anything about that, just wait for the tell-all at some point.
Okay.
Yeah, there's drama, but you know, moving on. It's not
my
drama to tell.
Drama is part of our lives.
Not my story to tell. But we did the first, was the first year ever of that, right? Or was it the second year?
Second one I came to, I think.
Okay. Gosh, I have a really great memory. That's cool. That's fun. and what did you dance there?
I danced Manon. Part of the...
With who?
Who did I dance with?
You sure?
Yeah, I danced with Ida from Royal Danish Ballet. She got a nosebleed in the show. Do you remember the nosebleed? And she got blood all over my costume. Do you remember?
Screw your costume, poor Ida.
No, of course that was the worst thing. But
oh my god, that was the same show where Bella got so mad at me because she had me do this number that I had done for a dance film. I'd like just made it for fun, and it was called "You Rascal You," and it's available on YouTube.
Awesome. I remember that. That was really amazing.
Well, thank you. It would have been more awesome, but I seem to have forgotten that she asked me not to wear the blood on the costume. So, the whole point of the dance is that. I emerge from a door, and I have either killed my lover or the person my lover was cheating with. So it's like the whole song goes, I'll be glad when you're dead, you rascal you, because like of this whole cheating scenario. So I emerge from the door with a butcher knife, and I'm covered in blood. And so literally like right before my number, I'm in the wings, and Bella comes up to me and she's like, no. Why are you covered in blood? And I was like, this is my dance. I'm covered in blood for my dance. Wow. And so she was like, no, this audience cannot handle whatever you're about to do. So you are going to take that shirt off that's covered in blood. You're going to put on Albin's blouse from his like Bournonville number or whatever he was getting up to. And she wipes the blood off my face with like a wet wipe, and she sent me out there. And I was like, just with like a knife, just and a dumb stare as this music played. And I was like, what just happened?
I remember that so clearly. Yeah. There was a real blood theme that year. There was blood everywhere. It was really
well,
strange.
You know, it really mimics the violence of the evening. The emotional violence of the evening. So, okay, let's get to your ABCs. I like to do this with my guests because I can't assume everybody knows how fabulous you are. So tell me a little bit about where you're from and how you got into dancing and how you got all the way over to Russia. Like, queen, how did you get over there?
Yeah, right. Okay, so from the beginning, I am from a small city in England called Hull. Hull is in Yorkshire, which is a county, the best county in England, might I add. Of course, I went to Royal Ballet School when I was 11 in London. I trained there from 11 till 19. When I was 19, I was in a class with Liam Scarlett, actually. So Liam was in my year in school. Me, Liam, and another guy got offered jobs with Royal. Mm-hmm. We joined the Royal Ballet after our graduation from school, joined the ranks of the company there. I was in the company in Royal Ballet for 4.5 years in the quarter ballet, holding many spears, many trays, many props. I was an expert at carrying spears, like literally, probably the best ever. High heels, wigs, you name it, mustaches. Oh my goodness,
good
I had
drag,
a great time.
Good drag.
Yeah, yeah, I was a pro. And then I was rat catcher in Manon many times, actually. Mm. One of my starring roles. Then
so wait, tell the people what the rat catcher is.
Oh my goodness, no, what the rat catcher is? The rat catcher is the guy in Manon Act One who is he Act Two as well? No, just Act One, I think, who has a stick with a cage on top with rats inside, who has to go around the stage and scare everyone with rats.
Yep.
And wear a squonky nose and old man's makeup.
Squonky. Can you please define squonky and spell it?
Squonky would be spelt S-Q-U-A-N-K-Y.
Squanky. I'd say that's squanky.
Squonky. I was never really expert at spelling at school, but I'll let that pass. That's quite okay.
So, okay, in our production, in ABT's production of Manon, the rats aren't in a cage. They're just literally hanging like from little nooses atop a stick. So there are like 15 dead rats just swinging from a pole. And it's usually
more fun, actually.
It's usually a soup. Well, I think it's scarier, honestly. And then I just have vivid memories of Hiso just like backing up like into me because I was Lesko and like looking horrified at the rats. She's an expert at looking horrified.
She's excellent at everything. She's wonderful.
She's an actress.
She is. So basically, that sums up my career in the Royal Ballet. And so I offered a job in Russia. But how it came about was while I was still in Royal, we had a guest teacher come to London from Russia. He set ballet class in the Opera House for us for 2 weeks. I didn't know who he was, except he was a small man who gave fantastic ballet classes and had lots of energy. That's all I knew about him. On his last day, I just before he left, I was like, "Oh, this guy's leaving. I need to get some more information, like some more help." I was like, "Excuse me, can I show you some extra jumps, please?" I was like 21. I was, you know, I was hungry to learn. I wanted to do everything. And so he was like, "Да, пожалуйста, please show me some steps." And so I did some extra jumps for him. We ended up jumping for half an hour in the studio after class, like just one on one. This guy, I was like, "Wow, this is amazing! Someone actually cares about me." Yeah. It was great for a young guy who was, you know, starved of attention. Mm-hmm. And so it turned out 6 months later, this same man became director of Marinsky Ballet, and he remembered me and offered me a job. And so eventually, I turned up to Russia and joined the company here.
That is pretty magical. You know, that just goes to show how far eagerness can go. Like, if you show your willingness to learn and your interest in improving, I don't know, the powers that be pick up on that. And well, there's a way to do that.
You know, he told me later that he offered me the job. It wasn't because I was a good dancer. In fact, I was quite, actually, as a young dancer, I was very weak. I had long limbs and I couldn't control myself. Now, I was by far not the best dancer in my class in school, and by far not the best dancer in Royal. So it wasn't because I was a good dancer who took me. He said it's because I actually had a good attitude and wanted to learn. He was like, "I can work with you. Come to Russia, I'll teach you." Actually, my first reply was, "No way, you're crazy." But then a year later, I actually accepted the offer.
So why did it take you a full year to understand that that was something that you'd be down for?
Because my only understanding of Russia was from James Bond films, and I was a bit terrified about going to live there.
Yeah. What? And what have you learned since then? Like, how has your perception of Russian culture changed?
Actually, it's changed a lot. I couldn't have, you know, it's really hard to explain because it's been a 10-year adventure now. I've been here 10 years already, if you can believe it. It's going extremely quickly. But it's been a massive adventure and a big roller coaster. There's been so much to learn, so much to take on board. I arrived here as a 23-year-old speaking not a word of Russian. I came in the winter, which is a huge mistake. I arrived in January when it was minus 15 Celsius on a warm day. And there was snow up to my waist. And it was like, it was just a nightmare. I couldn't communicate. I didn't know anybody. I was living in a room near the theater, which they gave me. And just, I had no friends. It was super lonely and extremely difficult to settle in. I was suddenly going from being a rat catcher to dancing solos and stuff, which I had not done since I was in school, like 5 years previously. So I had a lot to catch up on. I was homesick, terrified, and a bit lost, to be honest. And so it was hard. But over time, I grew to love this place. I live in St. Petersburg. The city is like full of history. You can just feel the imperial Russia here, the old Russia with the museums and the palaces, and every square, every road has its own bit of history. Rasputin was killed around the corner here, like where I live. Like, it's just buzzing with history. It's so beautiful. Canals everywhere, white nights in the summer, rough winters, but it's still magical somehow if you like Frozen or something like that. So,
Have you seen Frozen 2?
I have, actually.
How was it? I haven't seen it yet. Is it worth watching?
To be honest, I was disappointed. I liked Frozen 1 very much, but it's basically exactly the same, just with, it's the same story, it's exactly the same again, basically. Just in different setting. But anyway, watch it. Maybe you'll enjoy it. Some good musical numbers. But
I had the opportunity to watch a film a couple nights ago, and I was through Disney Plus. I sort of hacked into a friend's account, and I was like, oh,
friend's account.
Frozen 2, yeah. That's what I'm calling it. Frozen 2 was on the, you know, the available watch list. And I was like, but then next to it was Tangled. And I love Tangled.
Is that cool?
Frankly, like, I cannot believe Frozen was as popular as it was, because Tangled had me shook. It was so good. It was so pretty and touching. And I found so many, like, scary parallels. Like, I feel like it represented domestic abuse like that sort of Stockholm syndrome effect that mainly women feel with a lot of the times their husbands. So, like, when I'm watching it, it's like cute and funny and beautiful, but in my mind I'm like, oh, they're saying a thing here.
Wow. Yeah. Is this Disney?
It's Disney, yeah. It was like their first big animated solo hit, like computer animated solo hit, because they had done all the Pixar ones, and those were smashes. And then like they tried their hand at their own animated films, computer wise, and they were just like mediocre. And then when that came out, it was like Alan Menken music, and I was just living for it. Yeah, I think it would be a great ballet. I know you're not supposed to watch ballet movies into ballets, but I think it would be a really beautiful ballet.
Yeah.
And I need to watch it. If you haven't seen Tangled.
I'll watch it. I'll go watch it.
Yeah, the animation looks a little dated now, I have to be honest, but it's still great.
Thanks for the tip.
Okay, so you are in Russia, and I'm an American, and I get a very pointed portrayal of Russia and the culture from the news media, which I absolutely could, you know, give two shits about, honestly. It's so skewed and makes me uncomfortable. So I want to know, like, what is the number one biggest misconception about Russian culture?
Okay. From my own experience, when I came here, I found the Russian people very cold, and that's what I expected. But what I didn't expect was how, once I got to know people individually, personally, how warm they were. it was this, I don't know, when I come to America or when I'm in England or whatever, people are maybe not so hard to crack. You know, you can talk to someone, you get to know them pretty quickly, and you can get become pretty good friends with them. I found it very hard to make friends here. No one seemed to want to be friends. I'd talk to them a bit, and then that was it. The garbage back up. And
honestly, that probably had a lot to do with the fact that you came in and got good parts right away.
Well, yeah, it didn't help. But I'm probably pretty glad I couldn't speak Russian at that point as well. But yeah, no. But what I wanted to say was that the people actually are really, really, really nice. There's some really lovely people here, and I've made friends with people whom I know I'll be friends with forever, because now they know me and trust me. And not everyone. I've got people who don't like me still. Of course, it's the way it goes.
Well, you're really unlikable, so I get it.
I'm just sorry about that. You know, what can I say? But yeah, that was the biggest misconception. People always cold, full stop. There's more to find out. And that's what
I found. Don't you feel the same way about New Yorkers and especially French people?
Well, when I came to New York, I had a great time in New York.
You know a lot of people and you're in a dance community. So like, I feel like it doesn't even count. But like, if you're thrust into, I don't know, like professional New York, I'd imagine it'd be really tough. Like if you joined an office or something. No, do you disagree?
I think compared to the Russians, it'd be like playground, to be honest. So, like it was pretty hard when I came here. The Russians were pretty cold to me. They were pretty tough to crack.
And what did you
once I cracked them? It was
what did you do to just deal with your emotional, you know, the emotional repercussions of not feeling like you're fitting in, getting through to anybody?
Well, thank goodness I was extraordinarily busy. And I didn't have time to think about it too much. I just had to learn a new role every day and dance it that night. So basically, I was just on overdrive the entire time. So I didn't have time to sit back and contemplate my emotions too much, which is probably a good thing, actually, because I left my suitcase on the floor of my room packed for 3 weeks, going to like close it and go home that every day for three weeks. And then once that never happened, I just got through that period of difficulty and ended up staying. Much to my own surprise, and bit by bit it became home. Isn't that strange? Is that a bit like Stockholm syndrome? Is that what you were saying?
A little bit. Maybe you're Rapunzel stuck in a tower.
Feel like it.
Hair flip. Was there ever a moment where you really felt, okay, this isn't for me?
Definitely. Like, it was pretty a bit later, to be honest. It was probably a few years in. And I'd got used to it. I was dancing if I wanted to dance, but then I was thinking, like, you know, I want to go home. I miss London. I miss my family. My sister's in Royal Valley, for instance. My mum and dad are in Yorkshire. I miss my friends. I miss Tesco and like Sainsbury's and Marks and Spencer's, like normal British things that you can't get here. I was like, I've had enough. I want to go home. And I talked to Royal about going back. And at the time, they were like, well, you know, you left.
Ice cold.
And so, that was basically not an option. And so,
may I ask who was director at that time of Royal?
Oh, it was already Kevin. I like Kevin. We have some Kevin O'Hare. Obviously, you're Kevin as well as your director.
Kevin.
We have Kevin O'Hare in the Royal. I left when Monica Mason was director of Royal Ballet, and we left on very good terms. I wasn't on bad terms. I left. I left the company purely for my own personal growth. I wanted to learn and grow. We talked about, discussed this, and we agreed that there wasn't a place for me to grow in the Royal Ballet. And I've had the chance to come here, then why not? So that's why I came here. When I had enough a few years ago, I wanted to come home. They told me, you know, we respect your decision, but you know, since you've been gone, we've obviously raised up our own homegrown talents, and we've got our own dancers coming up, and we don't need any more solos. So we advise you stay where you are. That's fair enough. It's absolutely fine. You know, that's the way it goes. Absolutely. Every director has their own decisions to make and their own personal taste and choice. And if I wasn't Monica's or Kevin's choice, then that's quite okay.
Do you feel like they could have seen something in you sooner? Because you left when you were 22, you said, or 23?
I was 23 when I left, yeah.
So that seems like a good time to have gotten some soloist roles under your belt, no?
Well, one would expect so. In Mariinsky, the system's very different. When a dancer joins the company here from the school, from the Vergara Academy, for instance, they are assessed for their level of ability, their talent. If they are deemed to be soloist material for the future, they'll be given a teacher personally to work with them, and probably a role immediately, like to work on, to get their teeth into, something small maybe, but still have some roles to work on. And probably in the first year or two, they'll dance a principal role as a quarter ballet dancer, or wherever they are in the company, but they will have a teacher and stuff to work on. Whereas when I joined the Royal, I wasn't strong enough to be a principal dancer. No, I'm not pretending I was a great dancer. I wasn't a great dancer. I had potential. I had some nice attributes, lines, whatever. But I needed a lot of work. A, there was no one to work with me in the Royal Ballet. They didn't give me a teacher. One of my close friends in the company at that time, Jose Martin, a Spanish dancer who was a first soloist, took it on himself to coach me. And he very kindly gave me lessons, like one-on-one after rehearsals, after shows. We would just go together to a studio and he would teach me solos and stuff, because he was learning to be a teacher and he wanted to get experience and I wanted to learn. And so that's who coached me. But there was no one from the management who took paid me attention, and I didn't get any roles. They didn't give me anything. And
well, if that's the case, then don't you think you wouldn't have succeeded right out of school in Mariinsky then? If you really weren't up to snuff as far as doing soloist parts, they would have let you fall by the wayside.
You mean in Russia? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly would have been, because I've been a slow burn.
Oh, me too. I've been a very slow burner. But what I'm saying is they would have, you say you're slow burn, that's correct, but they see potential, not immediate ability. That's the difference. So although maybe you and I didn't have immediate ability from being out of school, we're both tall dancers, we both have lines, we both know what, we're useful dancers. And when with training, we can do stuff. Maybe not immediately from school, but from in the Mariinsky, what they would have done with you and with myself is they would have given as a teacher and said, okay, go away for a while, work with the teacher on a role. Maybe in a couple of years, if you're strong enough, you can dance it. By then you'd be, I don't know, not 20, 21. You have a couple of roles under your belts already. Whereas I was 23 already and done Rat Catcher, you know? So, and Mother Pig in Beatrix Potter. But apart from that, you know, it was slow coming and there was no opportunity. And I'd ask them, you know, why can't I dance a role? They'll say, oh, because you're an artist of the company. You need to be a soloist. I said, yeah, but how can I become a soloist? They said, well, you need to be promoted. So how do you get promoted? We got to dance roles. You're like, hang on a second.
It's like trying to get a credit card, but you don't have any credit, so you get denied.
Exactly. Exactly. Huh. So that was my problem in Royal. I couldn't get out of this catch-22. Though I had no repertoire, but couldn't get promoted. I couldn't dance anything.
But those rules are not applicable to everyone. Because you get that information from the higher ups and you think to yourself, well, that didn't happen with so-and-so or that person or that person. They just got the roles and it was just, you wanted them to have the roles, so you gave it to them. It's not me. It is me, but it is also your decision.
Of course.
So you have to realize, I mean, I've seen so many artists just keep struggling, waiting for the thing, waiting.
Yeah.
And if you haven't gotten it yet, it's probably not going to happen where you are.
That's why I left.
But it takes time to realize that, and it should take perseverance, and you should keep fighting for it. It shouldn't be like, you know, in the first half a year in a company, you realize you're not getting opportunities, and then you just disappear because you think the right choice. You need to
put a fine balance to work out, the balance between perseverance and finding the right place where you're wanted. It's a very fine balance.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that takes an intelligent artist to realize like the path.
Yeah, I mean, you for yourself, you start out at Boston, right? And then come to Boston to ABT.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in all honesty, I wanted to be an ABT since I was 12 years old. And I'm like, that's no shade toward Boston, because I had an amazing, amazing time there. I spent 10 years of my career there.
So
I wanted to be a dancer with ABT. I auditioned for the studio company probably 4 times, never got in.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I auditioned. I did the summer course for 2 years in a row on full scholarship because my family didn't have any money. And I After the second year, they said, you know, we're not seeing what we need to see in you, and you're not allowed to come back the following year, or like, we're not going to give you a scholarship. So I was pretty devastated, and I had to look elsewhere. I was like, well, I can't go there, and there must be a reason. So I figured out that I actually wasn't terribly good at ballet. And
hang on a second, pause. That's not exactly true.
No, I was good, but I was in the summer program with people like David Hallberg and Misty Copeland, and you know, like I was in it with people who were clearly destined to be star ballet dancers. And And I was in there were like 10 levels, and I think I was in the fourth or fifth level for both years. So it was clear, like these people were my exact age.
Yeah.
It was just obvious. Like I couldn't ignore the disparity between our abilities.
Yeah, sure.
So it was like just too obvious. So I was like, fuck, I better get better at ballet. And I went away to a ballet school in Virginia, and I improved a lot, and I tried really hard, and that's when I got an apprenticeship in Boston Ballet. I clawed my way up the ranks there. It was the same as you. Like at first, they were like, we're not sure about this queen. Like she's real rough. But then choreographers came in, they were like, wait, he's fun. I like him. You know, like he's some verb.
Rough diamonds need polishing. When you get polished, then they start to sparkle. You know?
Amen. Yeah, and that's what happened. And then I never forgot about my dream to go to ABT. So when I had been a principal for 3 years in Boston, I auditioned and got a soloist contract. And it was the beginning of a very new life.
That's so cool. Yeah, I can still relate to that. That's really great. That's really cool.
So I don't know if there are any students or their parents with young dancers in their families, I would advise you to advise them to just persevere and stay smart and look for what you can, how you can improve, whether that be look to dancers who you can aspire to dance something like while remaining an individual, or knowing where you're wanted. I don't know. That sounds really horrible, but you need to have someone in your court in order to play the game. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. I was gonna say the same thing. You gotta find where you fit. You know, just don't give up on the first try. Like you persevered. How many times ABT? I mean, goodness. You know, keep going. Eventually, you'll find where you click. It wasn't ABT two at first, but then you know you got a soloist contract after not being rejected for ABT 2. I mean, that's really hilarious in a way.
Well, I mean, I worked really hard. I'm a fun girl, but like, I actually work pretty hard.
Sure, it pays off, as you can see. So that's cool.
So I have more questions for you. So this might be a sensitive subject, and you can say nothing. But I wanted to ask you, because you went to school with Liam Scarlett, and he has had some really inflammatory allegations put towards him, and I just want to know how. I imagine you're still friends. Are you still friends with Liam?
Actually, I haven't been in touch with him for many years. I saw him when I came on tour to London with Marinsky, maybe 3 years ago, but I haven't talked to him since. So, I mean, all the boys from my class in school, we were like family from being 11 years old. There were 16 of us who were in school together at White Lodge, at our high school, and we stuck very close through the school. Almost all of us became soloist or principals in companies around the world. Thomas Forster is one of them. You know, Tom in ABT, I utterly adore him. One of my favorite people in the entire world. It's just a bundle of joy and laughter. Wonderful guy. And
I agree.
I mean, these guys who I haven't seen for a while or don't often talk to very often, when I see them, I still feel, you know, they're like family, like long lost family sometimes. Liam, I haven't seen him for a long time. I haven't talked to him since all this has come to the surface. But yeah.
There has been a lot shaking the ballet world and the world in general. So I don't know, how has that affected you or made you feel regarding just like being around your friends or dealing with it, seeing things on social media? Are you okay? Like, what are your thoughts?
It makes me feel very, very uncomfortable, of course. I mean, firstly, I don't know if the allegations are true or not. They were the investigation that was done in London said they had no foundation to the allegations. But he still lost his job in Royal. My question would be, if there was no truth to the allegations, then why was he fired? That was as a someone knowing nothing about the allegations. I wasn't around when this was going on with the alleged activity with the school boys from Royal when he was working in the company. I was already in Russia, so I didn't actually hear about it until it all came up in the press. I didn't know about it. If it's baseless, then I feel very sorry for Liam, because that's an awful thing to be accused of. If it's a little bit of something happened and it got mixed up and became a huge thing, as can happen, then that's also not great. But you know, if someone was abused, then I feel sorry for that person too. I can't judge him. I don't want to judge anybody. It's not my place to. All I can do is say, you know, we should try and show the same grace to others as we would want ourselves to be shown in the same situation.
So, okay, we have a lot of things happening in the ballet world. One being Sergei Polunin's sort of wild rants. And I see that there's absolutely no world in which he's going to be hired in the States at this moment. But I do see that he is still performing in Russia. Mm-hmm. What does that say about the situation and perception?
Sergei has a very slick and very good team around him who have made him into a celebrity here in Russia. He's very famous here in Russia.
He's famous here too. Yeah.
Okay, but I mean, in Russia, he's like a TV celebrity. Like he's on talk shows. He's on Hello magazine cover. He's on, you know, like dance TV shows as a judge. Like he's on all the stuff, and he's very famous here. He's a very sharp rise to very high popularity in Russia. I think most of the stuff that made him very unpopular in the West was written in English, and people here don't seem to know much about it, because they were obviously Russians don't read the English tweets and stuff that he was putting out. I mean, I don't know what was going on with him. He seemed to have lost his mind for a time. I saw him briefly.
It was planned?
I've got no idea. It was planned. It's made him very famous.
Infamous,
yeah. I mean, I've heard it said in the show business that, you know, there's no such thing as bad publicity. Does that count for this?
Well, you could say the same thing about sexual misconduct allegations then. And I just don't, I don't agree with that.
That's interesting. Yeah, fair enough. I agree with you. That's very, very true. But Sergei has a very passionate fan base, and he can do no wrong in their eyes from what I can see.
And do you think that aligns, do you think that means his fan base aligns with his views? Like, you know, President Trump's fan base aligns with his views? Is it a similar sort of situation?
I think it's a very similar mentality, for sure. Very similar connection there.
Huh. It's fascinating to me, because I feel personally sort of offended just by so much of his hate speech, especially it being an out gay man living in New York City. Like, I'm very comfortable. I'm very happy in my New York City bubble. And then to hear such blatant disregard for sort of any empathy is really unpleasant to me. And then also, more unpleasantness comes from the meteoric rise in celebrity from hate speech. And it just, I think it's incorrect, and it makes me sad.
I completely sympathize with you. Hate speech of any sort is never acceptable and should never be rewarded at all. Full stop. What else can I say? I mean, it should never be rewarded. People sometimes get what they don't deserve, people get what they do deserve, and it's always a shame to see people who get what they don't deserve. And that's, you know, what can we do? We can do what we can. We do our jobs, we work, we try and share love wherever we go and do the right thing. If we get some success through that, then that's wonderful. To see those who succeed when they don't do the same thing is obviously a shame. But what can we do? We can just keep doing what we do.
Well said. we can persevere in goodness and trying to spread information. I think knowledge is key to betterment.
Yes, absolutely. That's well said.
So, all right, let's get done with that unpleasant topic. But I'm glad we chatted about it. Very good, good little tidbits in there.
It's important.
Yeah. Sure. So I also want to talk about Royal Ballet. So you were there from 11 years old to 23.
It's, basically, 11 to 23. It's a long time to be in one system. But
it really is. It's the longest you've been anywhere then, I'd imagine, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. With soon St. Petersburg will eclipse that, and that'll feel really strange. I remember when I don't know, like I'm nearing the same amount of time in New York as Boston. And I can't believe that because I never thought I would stay anywhere that long already. So to be somewhere else for that amount of time is just weird. But I'm grateful and I just freaking love it all, honestly. So that being said, you had big dreams for Royal Ballet, I'd imagine.
I did. You know, I was one of these boys who, you know, I'm English. I was a junior associate when I was nine years old. I went to all the programs, you know, went down to London, eventually joined White Lodge, etc. Went through the system, joined the company. And there was a real push at the time for there to be, you know, English talent. When I joined the company, I think the majority of the company was foreign, which is not a problem. I don't mind. We had a wonderful mix of foreign dancers from everywhere, from America to Cuba to Japan, with an amazing mix of talent coming together, which was so exciting. For me, the young dancer, I could stand on stage doing my roles and whatever, holding my spears, and I could watch these incredible dancers from around the world and be inspired by them and learn from them. That was amazing. But there was a push from press and from, you know, newspapers saying, oh, where's the English talent? And so I was thinking, well, I'm here, I'm trying, you know, maybe I can help with that, you know? But it didn't happen for some reason. But I'm pleased with those who did happen for me. There's Edward Watson, there's Lauren Cuthbertson, there's you know, terrific talent out there. You know, now younger talent, Frankie Hayward and, you know, Yasmin Nagdi and Matthew Ball. There's great talent come up.
Absolutely. So, okay, I find this ironic. So you essentially didn't quite get to where you wanted to get to with Royal Ballet. You go to Marinsky and you really just smash it out of the ballpark. Completely celebrated artist the world over. Now you have British awards as like a cultural emissary and just liaison. And it's just so interesting how cultures sort of reclaim their talents after the fact. And I think that it's not wrong. I'm so happy that, you know, the British cultural world is proud of you, but it's just interesting.
It's ironic. I understand the irony myself. I can see it very clearly. It's very ironic. I found it ironic myself. Where I never expected to get an award from the British government for my work here. It was rather out of the blue when it happened. I wasn't expecting it. It wasn't something I was looking to happen. It's just for a start, these awards from the UK, they usually get given to people who are more older, to be polite. So, you know, I'm quite young to receive an award. I got a something called an OBE, it's an officer of the British Empire, and I went to get it at Buckingham Palace, and in the queue for, you know, lining up to receive your thing from Prince Charles, everyone was probably over 60, and then there was me. I was like, hey guys, you know, they're like, what do you do? Everyone's doing, you know, for wonderful things with medicine or with, you know, in the army or whatever. And I'm like, I'm a ballet dancer.
You're like, I have a beautiful cabriole.
Exactly. I felt like a fraud, but, you know.
No, you are not a fraud. You are an exceptional artist, and I am a fan, truly. I am such a fan. And at the risk of just being overly effusive, I just would like everyone listening to go on Instagram and follow Xander. You can see clips of his dancing, beautiful photos, get a taste of his daily life at the Marinsky. He's a great follow. So that's @_Xander with an X, X-A-N-D-E-R. All right, that's my little pitch. Yeah, with
Thank
an X.
So,
so I think I would like to start to wrap this up. I don't like to have a really long podcast because that's just exhausting.
Fair enough.
And I just want to thank you, Xander. I think you're an exceptional artist and a kind, generous human being, and I truly am a fan.
That's so kind of you. Thank you. I've been watching your videos and your amazing, amazing contribution to the arts for ages, and I must say, I love the things you do. You're so creative. I'm a mutual fan, so really, thank you to you.
Thank you.
Brightening our phones with your talent. I do appreciate it.
Oh, good stuff. All right. Well, I hope that we get to do a guest performance together again sometime soon in Sun Valley, Idaho, or elsewhere, yeah. Or Vail, or wherever.
With Bella, for sure. It has to be with Bella.
Absolutely. She loves you and says hello as well.
Thank you. You're home from me.
All right. Thank you, Xander. Okay, you're I'm going to just do a little sign off, all right?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to The Stage Right Side. Be sure to check back next week, subscribe, and I have a great backlog of episodes that you can listen to with amazing guests ranging from Alexi Rotmansky to Kevin McKenzie and Michelle Dorrance. Actually, did I do Michelle Dorrance? Well, if I haven't yet, I will soon. And remember, send me your recommendations for guests on Instagram and I will be happy to consider them. All right. Thanks, y'all. Until next time on The Stage Right Side. Okay. Thanks.